DBs, before we get to the episode, we have some very exciting news for you.
We're getting married!
No, tell them the truth.
We're having a baby.
Tell them.
We're on YouTube!
Yeah, we are. We just launched our YouTube channel. You can find us on YouTube at I Think Not Pod, where you can watch all of our episodes live and in color.
We got a color TV, Mama! That's right. We figured you guys weren't sick of us yet, and we thought we'd really drive that message home. So, if you are missing our faces or you want to see our immediate reactions, because, you know, we are podcasters, but we're also part-time Muppets, you can head over and see us recording our episode live on YouTube. We would love for you to subscribe and like and comment, help us boost in the algorithm. I don't know. What do the kids say these days? It's Riz. I don't know.
Something like that. Once again, you can find us on YouTube at I Think Not Pod, and it's just one more way that we get to be idiots with you, and that's truly our goal.
And as always, thank you all so much for your unwavering support in all we do. We absolutely couldn't do it without you. Should we get on with the show?
We should.
Let's go. Are you happy? Are you sad? Tour is over.
I'm really heartbroken because I love this show so much and I love seeing everybody.
And also now we have to write a new show. What are we gonna do?
I don't know. Maybe we just do a two-man version of Kinky Boots and take that out on the road. What do you think?
Honestly, sounds great. I'm in. Here we come, Pensacola, Florida. Hello, Joey.
Hello, Yellen Marie Marsh. How you doing, baby girl?
I am so great. I am so happy to be back because we have had one heck of a story. We're going to tell you all about it, but I just want to welcome you all. Listeners old and new, down bitches and drag-alongs turn DBs. Whoever you are, wherever you are, wherever you are listening, thank you for being here. My name is Ellen Marsh, and across from me is my soulmate, Joey Turrett.
So now we believe in soulmates. Nice.
No, it was a joke. Don't pull at that thread. Welcome to I Think Not, the podcast where Joey and I recap all of your favorite true crime TV shows, and there are so many true crime TV shows. But before we dive in, how are you, my love?
I'm happy to be home. I got stranded in Detroit for 2 days. I don't want to see Detroit. I don't want to hear Detroit. Detroit can fall off the map. I cannot believe, no offense, Detroit, but I mean, my lord, I was stranded there for 2 days. Delta was useless. I went up to a gate agent and I was like, hi, this is the help I need. She told me every which way I could go and fuck myself. And I was basically like, I don't know what to do, because if I make a scene, I will end up on TikTok out of
context.
Absolutely,
you will. Absolutely.
And it will be, the headline will be,
you know what I need?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
They're like, podcaster goes rogue.
Homosexual loses his mind. And we don't mean Lindsey Graham.
And this is why gays cannot be trusted. You almost lost the entire gay agenda for us. But what happened? Like, you basically were asking for help, and she was like,
she told me to hurry up. She told me to hurry up with my story, and I was livid. She literally motioned at me like, come on. And I was so angry, I just walked away because I was ready to curse this person out. And then I was like, I will end up on TikTok and my mama will call me being like, why are you on my FYP?
Well, yeah. And you remember when we were in Austin and we were talking to that guy at the hotel at the counter?
Yes.
And I was asking him, I was like, how do you deal with angry people? And he's like, you just let them talk. Just let them talk. They just want to be heard. They want to complain. They want to scream. They want to yell. He's like, I go to another planet. I let them finish. And I feel like that's just like what you needed to do. I mean, even if her answer was still like, there's nothing I can do to help you.
Well, all I was asking was, hey, I'm supposed to be on this flight. Can you put me on this a little bit later flight because it has, you know, for whatever reason. She looked at me like I asked her for her firstborn child.
Did you ask her for her firstborn?
I think we all know I don't want nobody's child. First, second, third, last. I don't want none of them.
Return to sender. If you have been sending your children to our P.O. box, please stop. We're going to send them back every time.
I Think Not does not want you to put your children in boxes and put them in the U.S. Postal Service. Thank you so much.
And all right, well, I'm glad you're home. And so Delta has the best lounges. Did you at least get to go to the Delta Lounge?
No. I got to go to the Westin connected to the airport, and that's about it.
You have status and you don't get to go to the lounge?
Nope.
You don't have good enough status. That's for damn sure.
You either have to fly Delta One or you have to have a Delta credit card in order to get into the lounge.
Okay. I listen, wherever Harris and I go, we fly United and we have status and we go to the lounge, and that's on you.
Know.
Everybody Anthony, if you want a little bit more of Joey and I,
a little bit more of Joey and I.
Head on over to patreon.com/ithinknot. That is where all our bonus content is. And let me tell you what we're covering currently on the Patreon, and that is Gypsy Rose's life after lockup. I had to twist Joey's arm to do it, and now he is in. This man is giving assessments. He is giving you comedy. He is reading people. You turned out to like this show, right, my love?
Very much so. It is truly the gift that keeps on giving. It's like watching a train wreck.
In very much slow motion, and you just keep rewinding and fast-forwarding and putting it back to the exact same thing. That is there, as well as hundreds of bonus episodes, all kinds of tiers, with all kinds of community events that you can join. For as little as $5, you can get four whole bonus episodes. And one of those is always going to be a life after lockup.
That's right.
Don't worry about it. It's going to be great. Just do it. It's like the first time you have beer, right? When you first have beer, you're like, this isn't so great. And then you're like, oh, this isn't so bad. You're going to love it. Head on over there if you want more bonus stuff. Ask us any questions you want. We're here for you. But don't forget, we're always going to be here on the general feed. And right now we are covering one of our favorite shows of all time. It's dork, but it's good. And that is called Southern Fried Homicide. Are you ready to dive in, my love?
I sure am, baby girl.
Season 3, episode 4, Homicidal Hospitality.
Southerners pride themselves on a generosity of spirit, especially when it comes to those in need of a helping hand or a second chance in life.
She was always willing to give people a chance and believe in the positive.
He had good old Southern charm, and women loved it.
But even among the closest-knit communities, you have to be careful who you let in.
He was just that kind of a guy. He could convince people of things that didn't even make sense.
There was a lot of fear. We didn't know where he'd turn up next.
There's a cunning killer on the loose, and he's ready to work his Southern charm in the most deadly of ways.
He's had his chance to be a human being, and he chose to be a monster.
Oh, God, please hurry.
There was no way she was going to get out of that relationship alive.
Well, welcome, everyone. We are in Dirty Myrtle, where some man on the interwebs decided to write this beautiful sonnet to express his adoration to Myrtle Beach.
Myrtle Beach, Myrtle Beach, Myrtle Beach. Goddamn motherfucking Myrtle Beach. Myrtle Beach, Myrtle Beach, Myrtle Beach. Goddamn, I love Myrtle Beach.
And that's the song. Somewhere, William Wordsworth is thinking, das poetry.
Was that the winner of a bad songwriting competition?
I have no
idea.
They're
like, you know what you gotta do? You gotta write the worst possible song ever. And they're like, I got this.
Yeah. Goddamn Myrtle Beach. I love Myrtle Beach.
Myrtle Beach terrifies me.
Why?
I don't know.
My ex-fiance was from Myrtle Beach, and I've been a handful of times, and it is colorful to say the least. But don't worry, we're not actually in Myrtle Beach. We are a little over 20 minutes south of Myrtle Beach in a fishing town called Merle's Inlet, which sounds like a nickname for someone's vagina.
How you doing? I had a great night last night. Met this beautiful woman. We had a great time. I got all in that Merle's Inlet.
You got what?
Her vagina. It's called Merle's Inlet.
What are you doing, Ellen?
I'm just texting the Morbid Girls to see if they want another podcast host. Oh, my gosh. Well, it's a fishing. Oh, God. No, I just walked right into that. It's a fishing village. God. Oh, God. Well, Rebecca Kelly, who is a resident of this village, tells us that everyone here is relaxed. Nobody is uptight. Nobody is stressed. That sounds insane.
Yeah, I'm like, nobody's uptight here. Try wearing a tube top to church anywhere in that town, and you will see people get real uptight real fast. I'm not speaking from personal experience.
Like, you just don't worry about stuff. I can, like, worry about worrying.
Yeah.
Like, if someone's like, we're just carefree, I'm like, what do you know?
There's a reason that there's a very famous line from the Broadway show Rent.
I'm a New Yorker. Fear's my life.
Like, could you imagine just waking up and not worrying about, like, your money problems or your finance problems or, like, something you said in 1997 that you are sure that everyone remembers? What about dust mites? Like, have you really ever stopped to think about dust mites? Like, you should be worried. They're everywhere, so.
I think they make medication for that. Now, tangerine flavored.
I don't trust Rebecca, and I don't trust anyone who doesn't worry, so I don't want to go there.
42-year-old Laura Lang's called Merle's Inlet home for more than a decade. People around here know the research librarian for her warm Southern smile and ability to find even the smallest of needles in the Saucasty library haystack.
Laura is a research librarian, which would be my second job.
Would it really?
Well, like my sixth job.
Yeah.
Researching shit all the time. If someone was like, hey, what's the average life expectancy of a bat in Indonesia? I'd be like, I'm going to find out. I'm going to find out. And I'm also going to find out what the life expectancy of all the bats are.
That's right.
You wait and see how much I'm going to learn about bats today. I would fucking love that. But Rebecca said that she and Lauren were really good friends. They finished each other's sandwiches. And
is that what she said?
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
What?
We finish each other's
sandwiches.
That's what I was going to say.
Now, Laura grew up in Texas. She married her high school sweetheart, and they had three kids. They had a good run. They were married for 21 years before they decided to go their separate ways. And their two sons went and lived with her ex-husband, and Laura took their 14-year-old daughter. And I was thinking, God, that must have been hard.
I had so many questions about that. They said it so casually. I was like, there's a story there. Splitting up the siblings?
Yeah.
We're Red Rovering with kids, like mom's side, dad's side, girls. Like, that's the penis house. That's the vagina house. I had so many questions about that.
Well, they won't get answered today.
Okay.
And Laura made the most of her newfound freedom. She went and got her master's in library science, which I didn't even know existed.
I mean, how many classes can there possibly be on the Dewey Decimal System? I mean, I sang and danced for 20 years, so what the fuck do I know? I'm no one to judge.
Well, her goal, once the kids were all grown up and living on their own, was to work at a university library. But listen, she struggled. It was a lot of balls in the air. But through it all, she maintained a positive attitude. She was funny. She loved to laugh. And I mean, listen, you gotta laugh or you just cry.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question?
What?
I'm genuinely not reading you. What do you call the place with a lot of books?
A library.
Okay.
Why? What was I saying?
I didn't know if it was a Southern thing because it sounded like you said library.
No, library.
Okay. No, because I know people who say library.
Why?
I don't know people's lives or their decisions.
On a steamy summer day in 2004, Laura spots someone new in the library. The handsome fella's been there all day and seems very focused. But she's not prepared for the question he asks.
And he asks her about any books she may have on serial killers, because he's writing a book of his own and he's doing research. And Laura, being a research librarian, is happy to help.
Now, when I heard that, I was like, this is going to go one of two ways. This is either a down bitch who's going to crack the case, or this is someone researching techniques, and that's terrifying.
Yeah. Well, this man's name is Steven Stanko. Very unfortunate last name. But Steven says, you know, I'm a published author. Do you have any of my books here in your library? And I was like, ugh, God, that would give me the ick immediately.
Does anyone need to make a call? I've got a phone.
Yeah. Imagine me standing in front of a Broadway theater and being like, hey, I used to be here. Have you ever heard of me? Do you know me?
You're just outside of the Hirschfeld, just sitting with like YouTube clips of you singing in this corner, being like, what, this whole thing? I was here once. That is so creepy. That sounds like something my dad would do. I do have to tell you, all throughout watching this episode, I had to text Tara Newell because from the jump, this man gave me John Meehan vibes. From the jump. And the way they described him, good looking, handsome, well-dressed, all of that stuff. I'd literally text her. I was like, do you know this story? Not to give any spoilers. And all I have to say is change your name. If your name is Steven Stanko, change your name. I have a girlfriend, hand to God. Her name is Nicole, B-O-O-T-E. How would you pronounce that? B-O-O-T-E.
Booty.
It's booty. People will be like, Nicole Boutte. She's like, nope, it's booty. Change your name. Change your name. When you can, change it. Don't.
Just drop the E.
I want to have the conversation. Or change it to Boutte. I was like, you have the opportunity. Everyone assumes it's Boutte.
I don't know. Boutte is not much better. I would just go with boot.
Okay. Yeah, boot. Exactly. The E is silent.
He says, I am a published author. And this really impresses Laura.
The man, Steven Stanko, tells the librarian that he's from the town of Goose Creek, just outside Charleston.
Sorry, it's outside of Charleston, but it's also northeast of Silly Goose Creek.
Got it. Thank you for that. You should be a research librarian.
Thank you. We're an educational podcast. Carry on.
And the other thing is Stephen is very clearly interested in Laura. He was good looking. He was smart. He was definitely the kind of man that Laura would be interested in. And she was.
And Senator Greg Hembree is here. And he says,
Stephen knew how to dress. He knew how to carry himself. He had good manners. If you were to meet him, you would, you know, invite him to your house for dinner. I mean, he was just that kind of a guy.
You know who else is that kind of guy, my love?
Who?
Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's not gauge a man or a woman for that matter by the way they dress. How about that? call me crazy. I think I've been working in true crime for too long.
Yeah, you can train a dog to shake your hand and roll over. Doesn't mean that dog won't bite you. Wow, why did I sound so Southern?
You literally just got on a plane, went to the Deep South, scooped up your old accent, flew back, and said that line.
You're
now
welcome.
Listen, I love it. If my uncle isn't my daddy, I don't know what's what.
Wow. So a few days later, Stephen surprises Laura with some lunch, and she's like, this is so cute and sweet. Like, I like this dude. And that's when Stephen starts to divulge a little bit of his past to her.
Right. And he's like, I've been to prison. Okay. That's not crazy. There are people who have been to prison for a number of reasons. People make mistakes. What did you check the wrong box on your taxes? Would you do a little bit of pot? Would you do a little bit of pot at your dormitory?
Yep.
What'd you do? Would you get drunk at a bar? Something happened? What? I don't think it's that big of a deal, right? And he's like, I did some white collar crimes, but here's the thing. I made the most of my time in prison. I wrote a book.
Yeah, so he essentially turned his jail time into a positive life change. And
just like Malcolm X.
Listen, I was like, we can get him bored with that. And,
yeah.
And Laura was very impressed by him. You know, we all love a redemption story.
Mm-hmm.
So after a few weeks, Laura and Stephen are dating and things are going well enough for her to introduce Stephen to her 15-year-old daughter, Christina. And all I can think is this.
Tina, bring me the axe.
I'm sorry. I can't help my gay self. Okay? I can't help it.
You're adorable. I don't judge anyone for what they do, how they live their life. That is a very big step to me. I was like, oh God, please, please, please let this go. Okay. I don't know. It's my trauma talking. Lola has never met anyone that I have dated for many, many years. For all the reasons that you know.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, Tucker and Edith have met quite a few men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And watched you do unspeakable acts that are against the Bible and against the law in some states.
I just have a given nature, and you just need to recognize that. I'm a giver. It's what I am.
Yeah, I've heard on the internet and Grindr.
Christina felt so much joy for her mom. Her mom's found a boyfriend. She doesn't want to get in the way of that. And besides, Steve seems like a nice guy. He builds her a birdhouse, teaches her how to drive a stick shift. Yeah, he's a charmer.
I was like, can someone teach me? Did you ever learn how to drive a stick?
All my cars have been stick shifts except for the car I have now. I've always, ever since I was 16 years old, I've had a stick shift.
Yeah.
Do you not know how to drive a manual? I would love to teach you.
I mean, I don't, do they still make manual cars in America? I feel like that's a very European thing.
My ex-husband and I had a Mini and it was a manual.
Oh, right. Well, that's a European car.
Yeah. I don't know. I love it. I love driving a manual. It's soothing to me.
It is not for me. Well, after 2 months, Stephen moves in. He's looking for a job and a publisher, and Laura is happy.
You just breezed right by that.
What?
2 months?
Listen, I cannot talk because...
I know. I always forget that. We are so different sometimes. We are different in very few ways, but the ways that we are so different. They said 2 months. I just wrote in my notes, oh dear.
Well, I did that with my ex-fiance.
I know.
We struggled in the beginning because... We were just trying to feel each other out and figure it all out. I would never do that now. In fact, I'd be like, give me a couple years.
Yeah.
But yeah, people do it for all kinds of reasons. And the problem here is that Stephen doesn't have a job. He's looking for a job and a publisher for his book.
Being an author is going to be his way to fame and fortune. And it seemed like a serious pursuit for him, for a branch librarian. That's what they dream about.
Laura is like, look, I see your potential. He's so charismatic. He's so passionate about his work. I'm happy to help him. And, you know, his charisma was so infectious that she was excited for him. Yeah.
I'm just going to make a quick call.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Chase Bank, I was just wondering how much charisma pays. Can I get that direct deposit? How much is... Okay, what about potential? Can I get that direct deposit? Oh, no. Okay, great. I don't give a shit about your potential or your charisma. I don't need anyone's money. I don't need anyone's help. But I'm sure as hell not bankrolling someone else's dreams when you have a child. I am not blaming her. I totally understand. Again, this is very John Meehan vibes, yeah. Right? Like, he's gonna do this. He's gonna have a book. And also, Stephen is like, I'm researching my next book. And Laura's like, research? Say less. She's giving everything to this man. And it just, it makes me sad and it makes me scared.
Well, we all take calculated risks in love, right? But yeah. You're right. Charisma does not pay the bills. You can't show up at Louis Vuitton and say, I would like to purchase your new $3,000 bucket bag. Wonderful. How will you be paying today? I will be paying in charisma. I also have uniqueness, nerve, and talent. Do any of those get me a discount? I'm happy to pay in installments. They'd be like, get the fuck out of Louis Vuitton.
And then the guy next to you is like, I got this one. I'm going to pay in the audacity. Thank you. All of it. Full. Yeah, the audacity. And my gall. My gall and audacity. Yeah. She just felt like it was all going to be worth it in the long run. And I am not blaming Laura. We have all done it. It just, from the outside, I'm like, she's worked so hard. She's a single mom. She works so hard. Listen, she loves her job. She's not raking in the dough as a librarian.
No.
You know, she's living a good life. I just want the best for her.
Yeah, she saw an opportunity to help this guy and she was like, I'm going to help. I can do this. I'm going to support him. And Laura has a best friend named Henry Turner, who she introduces to Stephen. And Henry was a 74-year-old veteran who was like a father to Laura. And Stephen and Henry began their own friendship. They spent time together on their own. So like, basically, things were good. Everything was going great.
Then Shanna Banana says that she was so smitten that she asks herself this question.
Could any man be more perfect?
Great question. I would love to tell you. Have you ever seen that meme with Rachel McAdams from The Notebook, like kissing Ryan Gosling?
Uh-huh.
He's like holding her. She's straddling him. But there's one meme where Ryan Gosling is actually just a big pepperoni pizza. I mean, Ryan Gosling is like almost as perfect as they come, mm-hmm. but he's still a boy and misses the toilet seat sometimes and also man toes. But that Ryan Gosling as a pepperoni pizza is perfect.
You ain't better than nobody. You leave food out all night and eat it the next day like it just came fresh out the oven.
I do.
You're like, does that pizza have mold on it? Gobbledy gobbledy.
You don't need to refrigerate pizza for like 7 hours. It's fine.
And this is why Ellen has had COVID 12 times. Listen, so...
Joey, you'll never guess. I got COVID again. Why? Like, pizza.
Yeah.
Leftover pizza. Turns out you can get it.
Ellen, how was your Tuesday? Well, I ran a couple errands. I paid some bills and I got the COVID.
I got COVID again. I'm going for a record. Thank you very much. What have you done lately?
So listen, Stephen does cook. And he cleans the house. He has a law degree. All these things are like green flags for Laura. So now we hit the spring of 2005, and Stephen still doesn't have a job, which means he ain't helping with rent. And Stephen's plan was always, I'm gonna write this best-selling book, and then I'll take care of us. Well, writing an unpublished book also does not buy you a bucket bag from the Louis Vuitton. And Laura tells her best friend, you know, some of the things that he has said to me, they're not quite adding up.
Yeah. And he's not helping. He keeps asking for money. And Laura's like, you're taking the piss now.
Right.
Like, this is, come on, go get a job at Home Depot. Go do something. And he's like, what? I will pay you back when I'm done writing my novel. Hello? And so one day, what are you doing? Just give me $20.
Why are you talking?
I just want to go to Carl's Jr. What?
Why are you talking like one of the Californians?
Yeah, I didn't even mean to. Yeah, you're right.
Mikey's pretty ding here.
I just need a ride to Los Angeles. I don't know what's wrong with me.
One of those things that wasn't quite adding up. Stephen told Laura that he got a job at a law firm at the offices of law, and hey, more law.
She sent him flowers to the law office where he was supposed to be working. And they came back. He didn't work there.
Turns out, Stephen doesn't work there.
Yeah. They called and they're like, hey, is that your Blossom? Or are you just happy to see me? This is Rose Nyland, I just wanted to tell you, though we love hydrangeas, Steven doesn't go here.
He lied.
Again, John Meehan vibes. And so now other things are also weird. We see reenactment Steven talking to reenactment daughter Christina about a text message on her phone. And reenactment Steven's like, who's Daniel? And she's like, why are you going through my phone, bro? You are not even my stepdad. You are the man who's porking my mom. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's a weird thing trying to discipline other people's children.
Right. I mean, we have talked about how being a bonus parent is very precarious. You're not a parent. You want to set down guidelines, but you are not married. You are just basically using this woman for her endless supply of Panera Bread gift cards.
Uh-huh.
That's weird. It's weird. It's hard enough being a bonus parent. I know we have lots of amazing bonus parents, but you're not that.
Yeah.
You're a guy who doesn't have a job, who Laura has stretched out her generosity to. Leave her fucking 15 daughter alone.
Her 15 daughter? Leave her 15 daughters alone. All of them. There's Mary, there's Agnes, there's Stacy, there's Casey, there's Margaret, there's Thatcher, there's Elizabeth, and then there's Taylor, and then there's Dim Sum, and then there's Diet, and then Coke, and then there's Mozzarella, and then Stick, and then the last one is Marinara. And they're just guideposts.
When it came out, I knew it sounded weird, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it.
People are starting to come to her saying, what's going on with Steven? He owes me money. He hasn't taken care of whatever. You know, the layers of the onion are starting to get peeled back on Steven Stanko, and she's questioning his truthfulness.
Finally, poor Laura gets up the guts to say something, and he's like, I am pouring every ounce in my heart and soul into this book.
Yep.
Because I'm a writer. And like, now I'm getting Shining vibes. Like, all work and no play makes Jack a very dull boy. Like, what is your book about? What are we doing? What are we writing? It is really very uncomfortable.
Well, Laura works hard. Like we said earlier, she makes enough money to pay the bills and take care of her kid, but there's not a lot extra. And with Steven living there and borrowing money and eating all the Cap'n Crunch in the cupboard, times are tough. And so Laura confronts him about this. And that brings us to Friday, April 8th, 2005.
They're 6 months into their relationship, and Christina is home. It's about midnight, and we hear this ominous 911 call.
Oh, God, please hurry. I don't want my mommy to die.
Y'all, this gets dark.
Yeah.
Not to quote Joseph Taranto.
Yeah.
Come to find out, Stephen had beat and bound Laura, and then he went to Christina's room and sexually assaulted her.
Yeah.
She runs away, and he goes after her, grabs her, hit her in the head, and began to choke her. And then they tell us this.
Then he looks at the little girl, and he says, look what you made me do. I loved her.
It's sick. Very sick. It was horrible. When this happened on the episode, I had to pause it and walk away for a minute. It is anyone's worst nightmare, but a child to see that and see their parent in that state is horrifying. So after he strangled Laura, he goes to Christina and inflicts a deadly wound to her throat, leaving her for dead. Steven then goes and takes a shower to clean up. What the actual fuck? And after his shower, Steven steals daughter Christina's Mustang, cleans out Laura's bank account, and he takes off, leaving Laura and Christina for dead.
Steven's got a lot of emotional problems, a lot of psychological problems, but he's got a bigger problem. Thankfully, miraculously, Christina is alive.
Yeah.
And we hear that 911 call.
911. Can I help you?
My house, I've been raped. My mom is dead. With my mom's boyfriend, Steven Stanko. S-T-A-N-K-O. Not here. He cut my neck. There's blood everywhere. Oh God, please hurry. I don't want my mommy to die.
How that warrior of a little girl, she was a little girl, had enough strength, enough of her wits about her to save her own life.
Yeah.
To make that call before she possibly bled out. And Christina is here. Like, she is here. She is a part of the episode. Thank God.
Yeah. Well, the police arrive on the scene, and it's an awful scene. There had clearly been a struggle. There was blood everywhere. And they find Laura, sadly deceased, and Christina was in critical condition. And immediately they put out a bolo for Christina's car and Stephen himself.
And Christina, thank goodness again, was able to give enough information for them to go on. You know, you don't know what kind of mental state she would be in terms of information. If she could talk, she is contending with a knife injury to her throat. Mm-hmm. The actual physical, I mean, I don't know how that works, if she can actually even still talk.
Right.
But she was able to get enough information to the cops to really jumpstart that investigation.
Yeah.
She is in critical condition. Her mom is deceased. I mean, it's awful and amazing that she had the strength to do what she did. But meanwhile, in Conway, South Carolina,
Laura's best friend, Henry Lee Turner, is awoken by a knock at the door. It's Stephen. And he says, oh, my father just died. He, you know, gives this whole sad story about that. And Henry is like, oh, my God, come inside. Remember, this man is a 75-year-old war veteran. They sit down to chat and have a couple beers, and Henry is just trying to console his friend, right? And then Henry says, why don't you just sleep here? So the next morning, Stephen gives Henry some money to buy breakfast, because Henry went out every morning to buy breakfast. And then someone says this.
They eat and they have a beer with breakfast, being men.
Excuse me. Being a man doesn't mean having a beer with breakfast. I don't know what or who that is characteristic of, but it ain't all men. I'm not sitting with a Michelob Ultra over my egg white omelets. Calm down, sir.
Yeah, beer in the morning. Have you guys ever heard of acid reflux? Grow up. You want to have the poopy squirts at 12 o'clock from that fucking bottle of beer? Go right ahead.
No bud for me. Thank you so much. So Stephen asks to stay with Henry for a couple of days, and Henry obliges, right? He's a nice guy. And the problem is, Stephen has sinister plans. This man waits for Henry to go into the bathroom, where he follows him with Henry's .38 caliber, uses a pillow as a silencer, and shoots Henry dead. What the fuck?
Yeah. Robs him, takes the gun that he used that was his, and also takes Henry's car. So he leaves Christina's car and now takes Henry's car. But here's the thing. When Stephen came over, Henry had called his son and was like, oh, by the way, my friend Stephen is staying over. And he was like, you know, it's fine. His dad just passed. He needs some paternal love. But that is the one thing that really helped this case.
And that is because that morning, Henry's son turns on the news and hears about Laura's murder and that Stephen Stanko is named the murderer. He's like, what the fuck? This dude is staying with my dad. So he calls the cops ASAP. But meanwhile, at the hospital, poor daughter Christina is in the ER recovering, and Christina's here to tell her side of the story. Thank goodness. And she says, I remember waking up and seeing my father standing there. And she says, where's mom? And he just shook his head as if to say she didn't make it. This poor girl. And after all of this, of course, Christina is still worried and wondering, where's Stephen? Is he going to come back and find me and finish what he started?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
As his face flashes across local news stations, panic spreads throughout South Carolina's Lowcountry, especially when news of the second murder is reported.
The cops go find poor Henry, who is deceased in his bathroom, and they find Christina's car that was there, but now Henry's car is now missing. So they obviously need to find this man. He is armed, he is dangerous, he's unpredictable, but also he's just kind of an everyman who can hide in plain sight. And the thing is that he's out and about, and he is not stopping. So now, cut to over in Goose Creek. A woman by the name of Amanda Wilkins sort of has like the news on in the background. You know how you people all listen to our podcast? It's just kind of like there and you're just like, what are they talking about? Half listening, half deep cleaning your baseboards. We get it. But she hears a name that piques her interest.
She hears the name Stephen Stanko and that he's wanted for murder. Well, Amanda freaks out because Stephen Stanko is her ex-boyfriend, and she knows more than anyone what this man is capable of. So now we go back in time to April of 1992.
Great year for music.
Great year for music.
You guys, our live show took place in 1992. I feel like we know everything that could possibly be known about 1992. Hit it. Show me that smile.
Ooh,
again.
Show me that smile.
Don't waste another minute on your crying. Thank you.
Amanda was a single mother who worked as the manager of a telecommunications company. And this woman had her shit together. She was a prize, okay?
Yeah, she had a son and a good job. She was just living her life. And Amanda's a down bitch, obviously, because she's gotten to a point in her life. And Shanna Banana tells us,
Amanda's practically thrown in the towel on ever finding romance again.
I get that. I get that, Amanda. Why am I going to waste this expensive foundation and shave my legs when my magic wand hits the spot every time, 100% of the time, it works 100% of the time? Why bother? I get it. What, baby?
You should work in marketing for Magic Wand. And it could be, the new tagline could be, Magic Wand, it don't talk back.
Magic Wand, then leave the toilet seat up.
Magic Wand, it won't sleep with your cousin Carol.
Magic Wand, it won't make you do doggy when you got PMS boobs. Because it hurts.
Magic Wand, it won't drink a Michelob Ultra over its Cheerios.
Magic Wand, doesn't have bad credit.
Magic Wand, it won't shave its nuts with your Lady Bic.
Ew! Joey, guess what? Magic Wand is back. Oh my God, I'd die. Listen, it's the best one. Not sponsored. I'd love them to be if anyone is listening.
Well, that fall, she meets Steven at her job and he asks her out for a drink. And immediately she's thinking, something ain't right with this guy. I don't know why. I don't trust him. And I was like, Amanda, I feel seen. If I had a nickel. So anyway, Amanda is all, I'm good, but thank you. But Steven is not taking no for an answer.
He keeps asking her, love bombing her, sending her flowers every day. He will not take no for an answer until finally she's like, fine. Which is like what everyone wants to hear. Could you imagine just like harping someone and breaking them down till they're like, fine. Like no one wants to hear fine to a dinner invitation. She's like, okay, whatever. I get it. Charmers. We've all fallen for it. But they go on a date and he gives her some happy sneezes from her downstairs nose. It's great. Whatever. Live your life.
You don't know that they slept together on their first date? Happy sneezes from her downstairs.
It sounded good in my head.
The man took her to dinner, okay? They have a good time. She's like, oh.
No, I meant like moving on because they were like dinner. And then they're like, boom, they're having a good time and he moves in, you know? So that was a passage of time, Joseph.
Got it. I'm sorry. Anyway, Steven does that whole song and dance, the same one he did with Laura about I'm a writer. I'm not going to be at this job too much longer. And my goal is to be a published author. And he's so confident about the way he speaks about it, so sure of himself that he convinces anyone that he comes into contact with that, like, yeah, you're gonna do it. I mean, you kind of have to be that way. I always say be delusional about your goals, like truly be delusional. Unfortunately, this man was like a card-carrying delusional person.
Before you know it, he's moved in with her and living in her place. She's carrying the load for two of them.
But a year into their relationship, that odd feeling about Steven returns with a nagging insistence.
Things aren't so great.
No.
This guy, again, reminds me of my dad. He's kind of always looking for a way to finagle the system. You know, people that just like, just go to work, like all of us. Go to work, pay your taxes, do the thing. He was like, I want to say he was like a used car salesman, but he was a used car salesman.
Yeah.
He was stealing cars off the lot, and then he would like work a deal on the side. He was a con artist.
Steven is one of those people that thinks that he's smarter than everyone else when he's not. And then when he gets caught, he's like, I don't understand how I got caught. Because you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
You might be charismatic. You might be enthusiastic. But what you're not is intelligent. You're stupid.
Yeah. And always trying to figure out a way around the system. But then his temper started to creep in.
Yep.
And now she's seeing his ugly side.
So by February of 1996, Amanda sits down with Steven and she's like, I'm done. You gotta go. I really don't want to be in a relationship with you anymore. And I know what you're up to. I don't really trust you. And Steven's like, okay. And Amanda's thinking that's that. Now, they don't say this on the episode, but because Steven was living with Amanda still, I think she gave him some time to get his stuff and get out after breaking up with him, right? So the next morning, Amanda's laying in bed and she hears Steven moving around.
And she's like, great, he's probably cleaning. great. Go pine sol it up, my man. However you relieve your stress. You know, that makes him happy. Maybe he's doing something to calm his mind, whatever. Then all of a sudden, Stephen jumps on the bed and puts a rag over her mouth. And she can smell chemicals, right?
Yeah.
And he's trying to hold her down.
He's trying to chloroform her with this cloth. And I mean, it's not working. I mean, it's not knocking her out.
Stephen ties Amanda up and throws her face down on the bed.
She fights furiously. And he says, this always works in the movies. Why isn't it working now?
And Amanda is horrified because she realizes he's been planning this. And meanwhile, she's fighting back with all of her strength. And eventually, she bites the fuck out of him. And that stops him in his tracks. Whatever plan he had to kill her, it wasn't working. And he didn't have a backup plan.
Yeah. So then he ties her up and puts her in the bathroom. Because, of course, now he's got to take a shower. So she's sitting on the toilet seat while he's taking a shower. He's whistling, totally turning into a different person. He's like, rub-a-dub-dub, rubber ducky, you're the one. Totally normal. This poor woman is sitting on the toilet, tied up, terrified, and he's in there getting zestfully clean and acting like nothing fucking happened.
It's the definition of insanity. I mean, really, it's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is what this is. So he gets out of the shower, he unties Amanda, and he leaves. So she was very lucky, and immediately Amanda calls 911. The police show up, they arrest Stephen. He is charged with kidnapping and assault with intent to kill. So he was found guilty and given 10 years in prison, but he was released after 8.5. So imagine Amanda's horror when she hears that not only has Stephen been released, but that he's murdered two people and tried to kill a third. Remember when he told Laura he went to jail for some white collar crimes? Was not that.
Not so white collar.
No.
No, he went to jail for bad, bad stuff. But of course, Amanda has this sense of security because she's still thinking she's safe for another year and a half. So obviously when she hears his name on the news, she is terrified.
Yeah.
And she is convinced he's going to come after her with utter revenge.
Well, it turns out that Stephen has other plans. On April 9th, 2005, Stephen is in Augusta, Georgia.
Each spring, fans from around the world descend on Augusta, Georgia for the Masters Golf Tournament.
A lot of tourists were in town. Stanko was hiding in plain sight. He could just blend right in with the rest of the crew.
And it's Saturday, April 9th, 2005, and a woman by the name of Megan Cassidy is out with her friends. Reenactment Megan is most certainly drinking iced tea out of a wine glass. It is what brown liquid could you possibly be drinking out of a wine glass? Can someone get props on the phone?
This is the South. We will drink anything out of a wine glass. Milk, OJ, and sweet tea.
Can you imagine if someone from the props department listened to our show and they're like, can you guys get off our fucking back?
They'd be like,
we are doing our goddamn best on a shoestring budget and you are here calling out my iced tea in a wine glass? I'm sorry if you're listening. We know you're doing your best. We're just trying to lighten the mood.
They'd be like, they talk about you at lunch. They're like, at craft services. They're like, that Ellen Marsh? Oh, yeah, she's a menace.
Well, that bitch, she notices everything.
So while Megan's hanging out with her friends, she's approached by a businessman who chats her up. He's like, hi, I'm Stephen Stanko. And she's thinking, look at this executive. This man is just my type. Why is this man giving his full real name to people when he's wanted for murder?
He is so cocky. He's like, I'm fine. Here's my real name. Do crime better. I mean, I'm glad you didn't, because your fucking ass is gonna get caught. But, like, that just speaks to his delusion, right? He's not very far away from where he murdered two people, and he's out here using his whole birth-ass name.
It's the definition of stupidity. So, on the other hand, Megan is very smart. She's an environmentalist, and she's very intrigued by Stephen. I mean, listen, what Stephen lacks in intelligence, he makes up for in charm. And it works. It works every time. And Megan was really into it. You know, he was buying her and her friends drinks. It was all very appealing. So they spend the night hanging out, drinking, flirting. And eventually Megan says, look, you're in no condition to drive. Why don't you come back to my place and you can sleep on the sofa? And he says, great. And that's what happens. He sleeps on the sofa. And then Megan says, you know what? I would love to take you to church with me on Sunday. Would you like to go? And he says, sure, I would love nothing more. So she's like, successful and he loves Jesus. Let's go.
Did you see
when reenactment Stephen went to sleep on the reenactment couch, what he was wearing?
No, a full suit.
Full suit. He was just like, tie everything. I was like, I want to throw up. Why are you wearing clothes on a couch to bed? At least throw on a t-shirt. Grab something. Fruit of the Loom. Anything. Tie, collared shirt. He's like, this is living.
She invites Stanko to go to church, and lo and behold, he would be honored to go to church with her. Well, that's another mark in his favor. You know, he'll go to church with me. That's a good thing.
Later that night, Megan's friends become just as taken with Stephen as she is.
Now, remember, law enforcement in Merle's Inlet, they're still trying to find Stephen.
Yeah.
He's in Augusta. They are getting tip after tip. They are following every single lead, but none of them lead to any kind of information that is helpful to them.
And they have not just local police on it. They have the U.S. Marshals involved, FBI. Everyone is working overtime to figure out where Stephen is. So back in Augusta, Georgia, it's Wednesday, April 12th. And one of Megan's friends is reading the paper when she sees Stephen Stanko's picture in connection with two murders. And she is gobsmacked. She's like, holy fuck, that's the guy we met at the bar. And so she calls Megan's mom to have her tell Megan because she's like, I don't have the heart to tell her that her new crush is a murderer. Don't get me involved. I was like,
yeah, yeah. She's like, I mean, she was so smitten and he's tall. I don't want to tell her.
And he's large. Yeah, so Megan's mom calls her and is like, you better go grab yourself a newspaper because your new boyfriend is a cold-blooded killer.
Yeah. So Megan runs to the cops, tells them everything that she knows. They were like, can we tap your phone? She's like, absolutely, yes. So he calls her one day and she keeps him on the phone. Can you imagine?
Hey, how are you? I have a quick question for you. I was wondering if... Hot air balloons are weird, right? Who invented those?
I would just be so awkward if I had to keep someone on the phone.
Me too. I'd be like, so let me ask you something. When you look at a palm tree and it's kind of like leaning, like curved a little bit, doesn't it look like it's crying? Do you ever feel bad for palm trees? Because I do. I'm crying now. Can you just give me 3 minutes to cry? I just need 3 minutes, three full minutes to cry.
Right, it's just with me.
In an act of sheer courage, Megan keeps him on the phone while police close in on the source of the call, a restaurant just a few miles away. Sure enough, Stephen is there, decked out in a suit and tie, enjoying breakfast without a care in the world.
God bless that down bitch. She is amazing. They track him to the restaurant that he's eating his chicken and waffles at. Actually, he is not eating chicken and waffles. Reenactment Stephen is eating pancakes. Now, as if this man isn't already portraying a vicious, cold-blooded killer and a psychopath, Reenactment Stephen is eating his reenactment pancakes with no fucking syrup.
What happens in your mind that you notice these things?
Babe, pancakes are a little non-bread-like bread that is meant to be dipped in a sweet, sweet syrup, and people are just out here walking these streets raw-dogging pancakes?
Medic!
How did you not see it? Dry-ass pancakes. They don't even know what he looks like. They're like the guy eating the dry-ass pancakes. That's the one.
Well, the police descend on this restaurant, and they're waiting outside for him to finish his meal. And he's taking so long that the cops are like, does this dude know we're out here? My God, he moves slower than molasses. What the hell?
Like, it's hard to swallow the raw pancakes you need because it's
dry. It's quite dry. Well, eventually this dude finishes his breakfast. He walks outside like he ain't got a care in the world, and the police arrest him without incident. Thank goodness. And then he is extradited back to South Carolina, where he is charged with 2 counts of murder and 1 count of sexual assault, as well as a federal charge of unlawful flight to avoid prosecution.
Honestly, the only thing that people are so relieved about is that he's off the fucking streets.
Yep.
He can't hurt anyone else. But 2 innocent people have lost their lives. And remember, Christina is still in critical condition.
Yep.
She hears about the news of his capture in the hospital.
Yeah.
Poor thing.
Once they took a closer look at the work that Stephen was doing regarding serial killers, they realized that it started out as an encyclopedia about serial killers, but it gradually turned into a how to be a serial killer. So here was a man who was training himself to be a serial killer.
That is some dark shit. Also, Steven doesn't know what the fuck he's doing because he's an idiot and he's a mess. So if anybody should be doing research or any kind of documentation on serial killers and how they got away with it, it's not him.
Yeah, exactly. And so then his trial begins, August of 2006, and he's like, you know what? I know I've been sort of playing this smarty pants, wearing this suit and all, and telling everyone what an amazing writer I am and that I'm super smart. Turns out I am crazy. Yep, I'm totally insane.
Yeah.
You're not insane, you're a fucking psychopath.
I'm like, yeah, we won't argue with you there. We know you're insane, but it's not an excuse for anything you've done, and it's not going to get you off the hook. And he was doing his damnedest to try to convince them that he couldn't help what he did because he's insane. But then Laura's daughter, Christina Ling, very bravely took the stand to testify. And what she said really broke my heart because she said, I did it for my mother because my mother no longer has a voice to tell her story. And I cannot imagine how difficult that must have been, especially because she was so young, having to recall all of the details of that night, her sexual assault, her mother's murder, Stephen trying to murder her. I mean, it must have been so traumatic, but thank God she did it.
I can't imagine the amount of courage that it took to actually get up there, tell her story, put that man behind fucking bars so that he couldn't hurt anyone else. And, you know, she had to look at the man who not only took the life of her mom, tried to take her life and thought he succeeded.
Yeah.
And tell her story. She's so brave. That is so courageous.
It really is.
On August 16th, 2006, Stephen Stanko was found guilty of the first-degree murder of Laura Ling and is sentenced to death. 3 years later, he's found guilty and sentenced to death for the murder of Henry Turner.
Stephen was scary for a lot of reasons, but the biggest reason for me is that he was so good at lying. He could convince anyone of anything, and he did. He tricked these people who were looking for love or a friend or a partner into believing that he was a good guy and robbed them of not just their lives, but of a whole community's feeling of security and safety. It's really horrible. And Stephen Stanko is currently on death row at Broad River Correctional Institution in Columbus, South Carolina.
And he is actually the first person that was sentenced to death in that county within for like 11 years.
Yeah.
It was very, very rare.
In 2007, he appealed before the South Carolina Supreme Court. He wanted to overturn his death penalty conviction in the Laura Ling case. His lawyer was saying, oh, there were errors, and because of the judge, we weren't allowed to make a proper defense, and blah, 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 blah. And it didn't matter what they said, because the conviction and his sentence, they were reaffirmed.
And there was also some weirdness in the trial. I read into it. It's all really confusing. So his plea for insanity was because he blamed it on like a traumatic brain injury that he had when it was very loose. It had all kinds of holes in it. And he thought it was like some brilliant defense that was like gonna change the face of everything. And it was actually just really mismanaged and really dumb. And they're like, is this what we're doing for your defense?
I mean, he tried to also appeal his conviction in regard to the Henry Turner murder case. That one also didn't work out for him. So by May 24th, 2016, the court has said it's a done deal. You are behind bars. You will receive the death penalty. And that's the last of Stephen Stanko.
Yeah.
He was so believable. And you wanted to trust him. He could tell you the sky was purple and you have to go and find a window because he just might be right.
I reached out to Christina Ling to see if she had anything to say. I joined LinkedIn because I couldn't find her on any other socials. So find me on LinkedIn. Just kidding. I'm canceling my subscription as soon as she writes back because I can't handle another form of social media. But from what I found online, if it is the correct person, I think she is an assistant district attorney.
Wow.
So I think this whole situation, she's trying to make the world a better place. She's doing something with criminal justice. If she does answer my messages, I will, of course, let you all know. But I'm sure that she lives with the weight of that every day. And yeah. What a down bitch. And what an inspiring woman. And she is so brave because she helped put him behind bars.
Yeah.
And poor Henry Turner's family. His son was involved in the appeals, you know, making sure that Stephen Stanko stayed behind bars and that he served time for his father's murder. It is just, it's all so sad. And I'm just, it's very dark, but I'm glad justice was served. Say something funny.
Well, I'm really hoping that Magic Wand reaches out to us to ask us to do ads for them, because I just thought of another tagline for them.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Magic Wand. It won't make remarks about how your ex-husband is really hot.
Bitches, we love you so much. Thank you for being here. We have so much going on. We have our quarterly paint party coming up. We have our merch boxes going out very soon. We can't wait to surprise you with that. We just watched our monthly movie. We watched Goonies. You all, you have not lived life unless you have sat in a hotel room in Chicago with Joey, belly laughing at Goonies. If you want to join our monthly movie, you can do so at our Take a Sprite and Leave tier. We got Swap Talk coming up. Please follow us on social media. That is where we make all of our announcements. That is where we find our community of down bitches that we love interacting with. You can find us on all kinds of platforms at I Think Not Pod, including Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
Also, you can watch us on YouTube now. Find us at I Think Not Pod. I didn't realize that so many people enjoy watching us make weird faces and scream at each other live and in person. And you can do that on YouTube. Please, if you have a moment, like, follow, subscribe, all of the things that Gen Zers say. It would mean the world to us.
We are so old, but it's fun. And if you guys like it, we'll keep doing it because we are Muppets and we are needy and we are here for you. And I am here for you, Joey, and I love you so much.
I love you too, Yellen Marsh. And I love all you DBs.
Love you, down bitches.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Goddamn Myrtle Beach.
Nope, it's still as telecommunications.
Of a telecommunications.
Even
just let me finish it. It won't drink a Michelob L. It won't drink. Jesus fucking Christ.
Oh, okay. My stars.
Shut up. Okay, you're not helping.
And he gives her from they go on a date.
That's
and
karma.
He gives her.
No, go ahead. Go
but
on.
It is.
Go
you're
ahead.
Absolutely right. I'm a cunt. You're absolutely right.